Welcome to Zoomed Leadership with your host, John Schmidt. This program will take you behind the scenes and deepen your understanding about the patterns and perspectives of leadership today. Now, here's your host, John Schmidt.
Well, hello, everyone. Welcome again to this week's edition of Zoomed Leadership. I am your host, John Schmidt, and again today, as I have been doing every week for quite some time, I'll be helping take us out to the big picture, into the up close and personal, and toward a world of desirable futures, those rich with the essence of constant renewal. It's a pleasure to be with you again. It is bright here today where I am. It's actually at the moment a rather brilliant field of clouds, 70 degrees on the coast of Florida, while it is just nearing sunrise tomorrow in Byron Bay, Australia, where our guest today will be joining us from. It's also, as I understand, in the 70s there, and so for those of you in cold country who relish the thought of living vicariously, do so for a few moments as we both, Tim and I, feel the nice warm 70 degrees with us today. But while the sun is coming up in Australia, let me set the stage for our conversation. We're going to be continuing our exploration today as we have been, but specifically relative to sustainability and resilience. And our particular focus and orientation is going to be on permaculture, and most importantly, what we can learn from on the ground and in the field kinds of experience with permaculture living. And if you are not familiar with permaculture or what permaculture means, stay tuned. Certainly Tim is going to give us a perspective and we'll talk more about that. But I think you're going to be particularly interested in some of the learning that can be illuminated out of this discussion, especially around the human and the interior side of not only permaculture, but living into the future as we may be finding it and as we've been talking about here on Zoomed. So, in addition to that, though, why is this important, you might ask? Well, let me fill out the picture, because this morning Tim was kind enough to send to me a report that I really found valuable. It's called The Oil Crunch, a wake-up call to the UK economy. It's done by an independent group of businesses across multiple sectors in the United Kingdom. And while it is UK-focused, I think it's relevant background in its 60 or so pages to us all. But I think I want to put out, and as a context here, there are two tangible themes that stand out about the era or the end of the era of cheap oil that we've been talking about, and in particular, the two themes in the report were these. One, it makes the case for rising prices and, in particular, sustained levels of oil prices above $100 a barrel within 5 years. Put it in context, we're in the 70s, high $70 a barrel today with the gas prices we pay at the pump. So we're talking about a sustained level within the next 5 years, at 5 years at the latest. But with that, not only higher levels of sustained prices, high price volatility, very high peaks, and possibly in proportions of multiples of the base we're talking about, and with it all, supply disruptions. So among the many impact areas that might have for us, we might actually ask ourselves, how might we most feel those in an up-close and personal way? And one way, and we've talked about this a couple of weeks ago, about growing food power, we'll feel it in food, we'll feel it in agriculture, in both production and in our fuel-based, just-in-time delivery systems to our grocery stores. So to me, and Tim was kind enough to alert us to it today, that the study once again points to the continuing importance of building resilience in our communities and to the increasing relevance of going local with our food supply. So my guest today has been living this realm of local resilience for many years in many forms, as we'll hear more about, but with local permaculture a through line of experience across it all. And my guest down under is Tim Winton, founder and managing director of Permaforest Trust, a nonprofit education organization and an on-the-ground center of permaculture living in Australia. Tim has a professional background in restoration forestry, organic agriculture, permaculture design, and post-carbon transition. He's also an integral thinker and, in my mind, a colleague in developing the perspectives that we're talking about. But a particular discussion today, I think, will be interesting around patterns and pattern dynamics and how they relate to sustainability and resilience. Tim, great to have you with us from Down Under. Thanks for getting up so early.
Oh, thanks, John. Thanks for having me on.
Tim, maybe we can get started here. You know, I think people are going to be hungry. There's some that probably know a lot about permaculture and the history of it, but maybe start off just with orient us to permaculture and maybe some of your path with this, Tim, to give us a flavor for what it is and maybe your contact with it.
Yeah, sure, John. It's actually a really direct segue from this peak oil crisis article that you mentioned and permaculture, because permaculture is a discipline that was developed in the early 70s as a direct response to that oil crisis, the very first oil shock, so to speak, that we've had, but not the last. And so two fellows, one called David Holmgren and one called Bill Mollison, developed permaculture together, which was, at that point, it was a kind of perennial agriculture, that is an agriculture based on tree crops that was using nature's patterns to help design and configure agricultural systems so that we could live outside of fossil fuel-driven agriculture. Because David and Bill had the foresight to see that energy availability would peak and decline at some stage, and that there would need to be a response in substituting design and intelligence in agriculture and mimicking nature and her ways of doing things instead of using massive amounts of fossil fuel and chemicals to grow our food. So that is the origins of permaculture in a nutshell.
Well, and Tim, that's great. And it has evolved, as I understand it, from other conversations. It's evolved from the genesis out of a response to some of the oil issues and the way, in fact, we're treating the land. But it has evolved over time in some respect here, too, and a great deal of learning. And that's been your involvement. You were involved early on, as I understand it, and then actually have been engaged in the experience of design and putting together permaculture designs and the living the agriculture of it and having people involved with you almost as that educational and learning experience of it. Maybe you can contextualize that because you had a building process yourself.
Yeah, it's been very interesting. And permaculture has definitely evolved over time from that early beginnings as a kind of perennial agriculture based on natural patterns and principles into a complete way of living and designing our culture for sustainability. And there's been many, many experiments over the last 25 or 30 years in permaculture living. And that's been a part of my own journey as well, to actually road test permaculture to see if the theory would translate into reality. Because like a lot of people involved in permaculture, I could see that we were heading to a future where there would be constrained resources and we would need to learn to live in different ways. And the first sort of evolution of permaculture was from a perennial natural agriculture to a complete design system. And Bill Mollison published a book called The Designer's Manual, which laid out the foundations for permaculture as a complete sustainability design system, or that was the intention. So many people took up permaculture as designers, as in permaculture design, designing agricultural systems primarily, but also neighborhoods, human habitation. It was influential in the eco-villages network, and became a part of the sustainability landscape, so to speak. And lately, permaculture has evolved once again, I think, into a set of principles for living and designing sustainable systems. And that's largely a result of David Holmgren's latest work, Permaculture Principles and Pathways Beyond Sustainability, where he lays out 12 principles of permaculture design and sustainable living. So permaculture has had a very interesting and rapid transition and evolution. And I came in on the second wave. I wasn't a part of the early 70s first wave. I came in the 80s and 90s where permaculture was developing as a design discipline. And I did some training with Bill Mollison, one of the founders, here in Australia, and decided to set up a rural permaculture education center where we could establish permaculture systems and practice restoration forestry and organic agriculture and the regeneration of the land, and develop what we called an educational community where people would come to this residential center and participate in the permaculture systems, and where we would actually see just how well we could live sustainably using this system and these principles and working as designers and practitioners. And that I call my experiment. It was a really interesting process to go through, and we all learned a great deal about just what does work and what doesn't work. And this is directly, I think, transferable to all of the people who will come along and either try or have to try these experiments as a way of adapting to our future.
And so, Tim, I know we've only got maybe 90 seconds, 2 minutes left on this opening segment here, but you're talking about principles, and I'm wondering how we can try to make it tangible for people. I mean, you're talking about sort of an integrated way of life and agriculture and growing food and living with it. So everything is connecting to everything else, but the output of one element is an input to the other, and is doing this in a very natural, very organic, non-fossil fuel basis. But that's just my narrow view. I wonder, with a minute left, you could even point to a couple of things, and then we'll pick up this after the break, about what we're really talking about here.
Yeah, sure, John. We, in permaculture, we really look to nature. And one of the defining features of nature is that it is extremely complex, and natural systems and ecosystems are very efficient. And in contrast to our own society, we use huge amounts of energy and resources, often very inefficiently, to create lots of stuff. But you can look to nature for how to create a modest amount of things using very, very little in the way of inputs. And that's one of the defining features of permaculture, is using natural design principles and applying them to our own society and culture to create systems that are super efficient and still provide for a high level of well-being.
So I'm hearing that super efficient, super natural, super integrated, and really addressing a number of the challenging issues we have, part of which is we're depleting the soils on one hand, but at the other end of it, we're creating outflows and waste that's difficult to deal with. Let's talk more about that when we get back. I hear the music in my ears here, Tim, and this is just an opening to this. I really want to get you talking more about it and sort of exploring the depth of what this has been about, and the depth of the learning about permaculture and the human side that goes with us. Folks, come on back. The show today, Integral Lessons from Permaculture Living. I think it's multifaceted in its dimension. Tim Winton, our guest. Short break. Come back in a minute. Thanks.
When it comes to business, you'll find the experts here. Voice America Business Network. The world is in flux, primed for a great transition, possibly an epical one. How does it impact you? Does it reshape the questions you ask? The way you view leadership? Today's complexities and challenges call for new realms of leadership. The world needs resilience and adaptability, new levels of innovation and brilliance. At Avastone Consulting, we know that our times call for shifts of mind. How do we cultivate real shifts of mind in our leaders? Not through conventional development, which focuses on gaining skills and knowledge within an established worldview. Shifts of mind truly expand the worldview itself, enlarge the capacity to see through new eyes, and transform interpretations of reality and the actions that accompany them. Those who embrace shifts of mind are the kind of leaders that Avastone helps to build. Change the way you pursue the future. Call Avastone Consulting at 1-678-461-8888. That's 1-678-461-8880. Or visit avastoneconsulting.com. Avastone Consulting, your source for leadership development, working with complex organizations toward evolutionary shifts of mind. There's a course offered on Seventh Wave Network that you never saw offered in college. One that provides information on how to transform ancient wisdom teachings into everyday life. You'll learn how to create from your spirit and explore the world with all of your senses. Participation is encouraged. Enroll in Spirituality 101, the course you can't afford to miss, with your host, Reverend Norma. Class is in session every Friday at 3 p.m. Eastern Time, 12 noon Pacific Time, in your favorite classroom, Seventh Wave Network.
It's all Arizona, all over the world. If you're a local Arizona high school sports fan, or if you're a transplanted fan somewhere else in the world, have we got a show for you. The first internet sports radio talk show focusing solely on high school sports is The Coach's Corner with Scott Lovely. Tune in to talk about your favorite teams, players, or coaches. It's 100% Arizona high school sports coverage and a little bit more. Tune in Mondays at 4 p.m. Pacific Time, 7 p.m. Eastern, to the Voice America Sports Channel.
When it comes to business, you'll find the experts here. Voice America Business Network.
You're listening to Zoomed Leadership with your host, John Schmidt. For more information about John and our program, visit avastoneconsulting.com. That's A-V-A-S-T-O-N-E consulting.com. Now, back to Zoomed Leadership.
Okay, back again on Zoom. Tim Winton, my guest. We're talking to Tim from New South Wales, Australia, far to the east, down under, out where we're not far from the beaches and the beautiful sunrise, still coming up, I suspect. We're probably not even there. He's joining us very early on Tuesday morning. But let's pick it up here, Tim. I think we got it kicked off with sort of an orientation to permaculture, but maybe we can even bring this to life to really get a sense of the principles and the livingness of it, what it's about. You had a 10-year experiment where you were actually living this at the center. Why don't you describe a little bit of that, and we can pick up and point to some of the principles and understandings and then get to sort of the integral context of our learnings as we go.
Oh, great. Okay, yeah. The experiment, to paint a bit of a picture here, was to road test permaculture and other strategies in sustainable living, and to do that as a community or a community of practice. So we called it our educational community. The Permaforest Trust, which I founded, purchased 170 acres of rural farming land in northern New South Wales. It's a lush volcanic region, very fertile. And it set about establishing a center where students and participants and facilitators could come and live for periods of time and learn permaculture and other sustainability strategies, including things like organic agriculture. And not only could they learn them, but they could actually practice them, and where we could test them and see just what worked and what didn't work. And when the center was at its peak, probably we had a population of around 20 to 30 people on any given day, and there were long-term students, facilitators, managers, guests, woofers, that's willing workers on organic farms. So it was quite an interesting and diverse group of people living and working together and testing out just how sustainable we could be. And what was really interesting was that everyone came voluntarily to participate in low-resource living. I think a lot of us there really wanted to see just what the possibilities were. And interestingly, we lived extremely well. That is, materially, we lacked nothing. And we could have high levels of well-being on roughly a fifth to a tenth of what the normal suburban Australian family consumes in terms of energy and resources. So we had lots of great organic food to eat. A substantial portion of that we grew ourselves. We harvested our own energy, our own water. We processed most of our own waste. We managed to improve the ecology of the farm and practice through the practices of environmental restoration. We managed to increase our soil fertility while producing food rather than degrade our soil fertility. So, and we had ways of measuring these, and we had real constraints and limitations on just how much we had to use. If there was 20 people at the center on a given day, we knew that our water budget as a community was only 2,000 liters. So it's 100 liters each. That includes your share for irrigating, your share of the food, laundry, washing the dishes, what you drink. We were on solar power, so we knew we only had so many amp hours of electricity to run our equipment. And things like the fridge became a shared community resource. You can imagine 20 people using one fridge and trying to live like that. So what was interesting was we started to substitute community strategies and design strategies and behavioral adjustments for energy resources and equipment. And just as an example, people would quite often come to the center, and after they're there for a few days, they would say, oh, you need another fridge. There's 20 people here, and there's not enough room in the fridge. And we'd say, well, look, we do things a bit differently here. And what we do is we, rather than get another fridge and consume more resources, we're going to learn to use the fridge we have better. In fact, we're going to redesign our way of life. We're going to grow a lot of fresh food that we can pick immediately before we eat it as a strategy so that we don't need to use a fridge. If people want to drink cold beer, we'll put them in the dam and they can cool them down that way. We can learn as a community to, in a quite sophisticated and complex way, share the fridge so that we design our food system so that we don't need many refrigerated foods. We have a system in place where people learn to use the fridge really effectively and pack it well. So we developed all of these strategies that basically involve design, behavior change, or community strategies to lessen the amount of energy and resources we used and to try and increase our levels of well-being.
Well, so, Tim, this is really interesting, and I think our listeners will appreciate this because we're building, as you know, and you listen to the show regularly as well, but we've been building the perspective that with the issue around energy, the issue around economy, the issues around potential constraints as we go forward in terms of growth, that it begins to challenge the old way and the old model of more and more and more and more resources which the planet cannot produce. And what you've really been doing is leading it, being leading edge in just a small experiment of what this might actually be like if we start actually thinking about larger scale communities beginning to live this and how is it that we individually feel in that. And I think that's really compelling and profound.
Well, it was a really interesting experiment, and we learned some really interesting things that I did not think would be important. My perspective when I went into this, being a permaculturist, was that the way you live sustainably is to design sustainable agricultures and sustainable human habitation, as in eco-communities, and that really your focus is on the land, on the ecology, on restoring the environment, because it's the environment that supports society and economy. But what we really found was that working on the environment is relatively easy. That is, our strategies in permaculture design and food production and organic agriculture and restoration forestry worked really well. We were quite skilled at those things, and we got very good results. The places where we had to work the hardest to maintain our sustainability indicators was in what I call I space, which is the personal dimension, and we space, which is the collective community or cultural dimension, as well as eco space, the ecology and the landscape. And by far the biggest challenges, interestingly, were in I space and we space. So we had to develop very specific strategies to help people adjust their behavior and remain happy and healthy, and very specific ways and procedures for people to learn to re-engage in high levels of community commitment, because we really have gotten away from that in our society. We're highly individualistic.
Well, what, and put it another way, Tim, is what I'm hearing is the movement away from the material and recognizing that it's easier to focus on some of those physical, tangible, material elements, but it's towards something that's an interior and intangible kind of change. And I'm hearing that what we might have expected about the physicality was maybe even easier than the personal side of this. And that's a real stimulating thing to have in our awareness in terms of communities and thinking about resilience, that the conversation quickly goes to all of the what's, but there's a human side of this. And that's what you've been living.
Yes, and that's the great lesson I've taken out of this. And that's what's led me to an integral approach and an integral perspective. Because integral includes the interior dimensions of any challenge or problem or way of being. And permaculture really did focus on the environment. And it actually has some really great things to offer in terms of sustainability and ecology and designing agricultures and human settlements. But it only has a little bit to say about what I call we space or the community or culture. It has an ethic of people care, which it espouses, but the ways of practicing people care in permaculture are very small in compared to the ways of practicing the eco-space practices in permaculture. And it has virtually nothing to say about the individual or the personal interior aspect of how you're feeling, how you're thinking, how you're coping. A lot of people who came to Permaforest Trust to participate in this experiment found the personal adjustment to losing personal freedom because they had community commitments. You know, you can use less by sharing more, and personal transport was an issue because we tried not to drive our cars and we were in an isolated rural setting. Personal space was an issue because we were sharing limited amounts of infrastructure. And those things were really challenging. They were, to be honest, by far the most challenging aspects of keeping our sustainability indicators sweet. So very rapidly we understood that not only do we have to have good community processes, but we really need to The biggest challenge in sustainability could well be the interior transition and change for the individual person.
And so say a little bit more about how people dealt with this. I know for me, I'm a big freedom person, always have been in my life. And, you know, it has that feeling for me personally about having less freedom of going where I want, when I want, how to use resources, even though in the conservation nature. But what did you find in terms of the individuals there? How did they actually respond to having to live with less and engaging with others in a communal fashion to engage in doing less collectively? What was your sense of that, the people?
There were really two categories. There were people who could not tolerate it for very long and simply left. And that was always a choice. I mean, this was always a voluntary experiment, and you could come for as long as it was a good thing for you. But it was a very challenging environment, in fact. And then there was the other camp who substituted the physical and material freedom that they were used to, but perhaps couldn't have to the same degree, for an interior kind of freedom. And that, you know, people who stuck it out usually evolved some sort of practice where they could sit and they could have that interior freedom, I think, for lack of a better way of putting it, for the kinds of freedoms they were used to in the outside world. And this is the work that that I am now very interested in developing in conjunction with the EcoSpace stuff and community practices in WeSpace. But to really bring that interior dimension of transformation and change and growth into the sustainability debate, and to integrate iSpace, WeSpace, and EcoSpace practices in a kind of applied integral approach to sustainability, that's what I think is the most effective leveraged practice in sustainability at the moment.
And so that's really what you're describing as integral here, and we've talked a little bit about it. It's not only the tangible forms and the systems, the way we go about it, but it's the interior space of our own individual context and relationship to the kinds of change, being aware of that, helping nurture that, helping support that. It's a big shift in the West from having our identity and our livingness being based on the material world and having more and more, but how to do that collectively. And Tim, that's a really a perspective maybe we can build on even a little bit more when we get back. It's the I, it's the we, it's the all of us, and it's an ecosystem, an approach to a livingness in the world that brings the systems into harmony. And that's a pretty interesting dynamic that we've been talking about. Let's come back in a minute. I hear the music in my ears. Tim Winton with us, our guest today. Let's continue to learn from the hands-on experience, the leading edge, those perspectives, I think, that are guideposts for us on this realm of resilience in our communities and sustainability. Come back in a minute. Thanks.
Stocks, bonds, investment opportunities, financial news, and talk. We can help. Call us now toll-free, 866-472-5790. 866-472-5790. Voice America Business Network. The world is in flux, primed for a great transition, possibly an epical one. How does it impact you? Does it reshape the questions you ask? The way you view leadership. Today's complexities and challenges call for new realms of leadership. The world needs resilience and adaptability, new levels of innovation and brilliance. At Avastone Consulting, we know that our times call for shifts of mind. How do we cultivate real shifts of mind in our leaders? Not through conventional development, which focuses on gaining skills and knowledge within an established worldview. Shifts of mind truly expand the worldview itself, enlarge the capacity to see through new eyes, and transform interpretations of reality and the actions that accompany them. Those who embrace shifts of mind are the kind of leaders that Avastone helps to build. Change the way you pursue the future. Call Avastone Consulting at 1-678-461-8888. That's 1-678-461-8880. Or visit avastoneconsulting.com. Avastone Consulting, your source for leadership development, working with complex organizations toward evolutionary shifts of mind.
Stop wasting time. Get what you want. Live your dream life. The Dream Big Revolution. Imagine having more freedom, better health, more money, happiness. Could your business be more successful? Unless you're living the life you want, you're wasting precious time. Your life is too valuable to waste. Let Leanne Hilgers help you find health, wealth, and happiness. Listen in and live your dream life. Join the Dream Big Revolution. Tune in every Tuesday at noon Eastern Time, 9 a.m. Pacific Time, on the Seventh Wave Network.
Ask Theo Live is talk radio like you've never heard before. Following her near-death experience, world-renowned author and spiritual medium Sheila Gillette became the direct voice channel for Theo, a consortium of 12 archangels. Through this unique channel, Sheila and her co-host Marcus Gillette present you with an opportunity to speak directly with Theo live on air on any topic you wish to discuss, including receiving authentic messages from deceased loved ones and angelic guides. Get the answer you need by tuning in to Ask Theo Live talk radio. Tuesday mornings at 8 a.m. Pacific Time, 11 a.m. Eastern Time on Seventh Wave Network.
These days, everyone is looking for information on staying young, healthy, and fit. The Voice America Health and Wellness Network is here to help you on your quest to better health and a better you. We talk about everything from diet, fitness, and aging to substance abuse, personal growth, mental health, and much more. Learn from our experts who cover health and wellness from traditional and holistic perspectives. Tune in to the Voice America Health and Wellness Network. Healthy living starts here.
From the boardroom to you, Voice America Business Network.
You're listening to Zoom Leadership with your host, John Schmidt. For more information about John and our program, visit avastoneconsulting.com. That's avastoneconsulting.com. Now, back to Zoomed Leadership.
Okay, back here on Zoom today, Tim Winton, our guest. We're talking Down Under. We're talking to Australia and the wonderful living experiment that I think is really important for us as we begin to consider this transition into this new world, this new sense of an era of cheap oil that we're at the end of, what the implications of that are, but moreover, how is it we might consider this from both the tangible dimensions and the intangible dimensions, both from the collective and the individual standpoint. I think you've done a great job, Tim, starting to frame that up. But I'm wondering, even as you've been in this, the core insights, even with the human dimension, the interior dimension being so important, but if we took a step up on the balcony here and said, insight-wise, is there anything more, how would you look at the realm of experience?
That's interesting also. That experiment now has been concluded. So we ran it, we learned, we concluded it, and now we've moved on. I say we, people involved in Permaforest Trust and who are interested in a more integral approach to sustainability with me. We've had a chance now to stand back and to look at that and to distill some of these core insights. And one of the things that really stands to the fore in terms of understanding how to live this way, and one of the most important tools or insights, is really about patterns and principles. And this is a core insight of permaculture, that we look to natural systems to see how they're organized and how they're configured and how they work. And we take those lessons, or we understand those design principles, if you like, and we try and apply them to our own world. Well, now it's clear that, to me anyway, that the patterns and principles of nature can not only be transformed from ecosystems to, say, business systems or industrial systems or how our society and economy work, but they can also be translated to the community and cultural dimension, we space, and to the dynamics of I space. So if you want to tie all of these important domains, I space, we space, eco space, together and practice them in an integrated way as a sustainability strategy, then it's really patterns and principles that stand out. And I realized that for quite a long time, I had developed a way of thinking and understanding the world that was very much about systems, complexity, patterns, the dynamics of nature, natural systems. And I began applying these and realizing they were quite similar to what happens in my own psychology, in my own being, and what goes on in the culture around me. And eventually I formalized this way of thinking, and I called it pattern dynamics. And it's called pattern dynamics because I've really tried to create a set of principles that are modeled on nature's dynamic patterns or organizing principles. I think your listeners will be familiar with the power of principles in, say, business management. There are some distinct principles, that is, general ideas or understandings that can be applied in different unique ways. All businesses have cycles. Some business cycles are yearly, some business cycles are weekly. If we pay attention to those cycles, we can have a better business rather than a worse business. All businesses need structures. They need financial structures and management structures. All businesses, as another principle, will need a unique offering, which they bring to the marketplace. Businesses need to be creative and continually adapt, learn, and evolve, another core principle of business. And so principles really help us make things more efficient and more productive, which is what we have to do. Going into the future, the big transition will be from always being able to grow and have more to not being able to do that, and to have to be able to use the principles of good design to create efficient systems that allow us to live well with less. So this principles and patterns thing, there's a tie in there, and it's a critical insight, which I'll explain in a moment.
But say a little bit more here. We want to explore that, but give some examples, if you could, to make this concrete for our listeners about what would be some examples of some of the principles that come out of observing nature that are relevant in our thinking about our communities in terms of sustainability or in terms of our organizations.
Sure. Well, I'll go straight to one of David Holmgren's principles from his book, Permaculture Principles and Pathways Beyond Sustainability. And in that book, he outlines 12 core principles of sustainable design and sustainable living. And one of those is small and slow solutions. One of the lessons we can take from nature is that it works very efficiently on, in fact, a low rate of input. And that rate of input is 1 kilowatt per square meter of sunlight hitting the surface of the earth. And that's transformed into biomass, which is plants, which is then transformed into zoomass, which is animals. And that's the basic ecological process. Our own society has a huge energy subsidy from fossilized sunlight, which is coal, oil, and gas, essentially. So these fossil fuels that we use to turbocharge our society. If those fossil fuels and their availability goes into decline and we don't have a substitute, then our society, too, must go back to a more solar orientation. So the coming sustainable transition will, in many ways, unless someone pulls an energy rabbit out of an energy hat, will be about learning to live well with less, on a back to a solar economy. And so small and slow solutions allow you to do that, because if you have lots of energy and resources, you can go big, you can be big, and you can go fast. Kind of like the dragster idea. You can use a huge amount of fuel in a short time and have a very powerful, fast act. But when you have to go back to less resources, smaller and slower solutions is the only way to go. And then you're talking about the Volkswagen Lupo, where you go a very long way on a little bit of fuel, even if you go slower and you're not so big.
Well, it's interesting with our guest Joshua Ramo last week talking about the nature of change and the adaptive change and the variables that you're attending to. Part of what we talked about last week is the difference between fast variables and slow variables, and the battering ram approach on fast variables and how that doesn't always get us where we need to go. Last week we also talked about slow variables and how those variables met over time and dealt with over time really harvest some richness and build a foundation for us. And that's what you're describing here in other terms.
Well, that's the great and interesting thing about engaging in this transition and running this experiment was that we learned that some of these things that sound not so good, as in, you know, using less, everyone's always saying you're going to have less, can actually be profoundly nurturing and improve our lives in ways that we could never imagine. A lot of us would really like to slow down and get smaller. So there's the downshifting trend, what we call the tree change and sea change trend in Australia, where people leave their big, fast lifestyle in the city and move to a coastal or rural area and slow down a bit and have a smaller kind of footprint, and their lifestyle indicators improve. Their well-being improves, their happiness improves. So I think that it's entirely possible that this transition, if it's looked at in the right way and engaged in the right way, could lead to a more meaningful, creative, beautiful, interesting future. It need not be about hardship and having to let go of things that are really important to us. I think we can keep all of those, and in fact, we could have a better future if we get this right. But for me, that really comes down to these patterns and principles.
Well, what you're describing too as well, Tim, is it's not necessarily just a future that says it's going to be a diminished life. It's beginning to describe that because we're beyond the sustainable limits in so many areas, ecologically, economically, energy-wise, we're beyond the limits of what we can sustain as a world, that it takes a new form. And what you're describing is rethinking that form and building in and recognizing the interiority that might be here is a piece of this that can be nurtured, supported, evolved, flourished, that it isn't a matter of feeling like it's just a diminished world. It's actually a growing world, but a growing world within the context of realities and not just a vision of what it is with more and more and more. And that's an interesting one. I think that's a part of the experiment that it really appealed to me as we've talked about it over the years.
Yeah, getting back to this interior dimension, there is a huge amount that we can provide for each other. You know, after we're all over the material threshold, so that we have that the basic day-to-day needs met, then engaging in what are often called being needs, human development and growth, and the growth of interior awareness, doesn't take a lot of material resources. We can do that in a really effective way, and in fact, people are likely to turn inward as the outward world starts to become constrained.
And that's a point for us to pick up, I think, even more in the last segment, both that and the nature of pattern dynamics. And it seems to me that the part of what we don't necessarily put on the table well is that we've all been through our lives, been through a variety of changes, maybe not in the same kind of change we're dealing with here, but we're dealing with a lot of change in our lives up to this point. And there's an inherent resilience, there's an inherent dynamism, an inherent capacity that we have. And perhaps this is a means of flourishing that even more fully and directly in the context of the outward change in the world. And let's come back to that in just a minute, Tim. Take a break here. Last segment, folks. Integral lessons from permaculture living. Tim Winton, our guest from Down Under. Come back in a moment for our last segment. Thanks.
Up-to-date business and financial news. Call now and get the financial information you need. 866-472-5790. 866-472-5790.
The experts are here.
Voice America Business Network. The world is in flux, primed for a great transition, possibly an epical one. How does it impact you? Does it reshape the questions you ask? The way you view leadership. Today's complexities and challenges call for new realms of leadership. The world needs resilience and adaptability, new levels of innovation and brilliance. At Avastone Consulting, we know that our times call for shifts of mind. How do we cultivate real shifts of mind in our leaders? Not through conventional development, which focuses on gaining skills and knowledge within an established worldview. Shifts of mind truly expand the worldview itself, enlarge the capacity to see through new eyes, and transform interpretations of reality and the actions that accompany them. Those who embrace shifts of mind are the kind of leaders that Avastone helps to build. Change the way you pursue the future. Call Avastone Consulting at 1-678-461-8880. That's 1-678-461-8880. Or visit avastoneconsulting.com. Avastone Consulting, your source for leadership development, working with complex organizations toward evolutionary shifts of mind. Women in business today face many challenges in advancing their careers and reaching their goals. There are corporate executives, entrepreneurs, and business owners that have made their mark in business. Now you can learn their secrets and tips. Listen to Women Mean Business as your host, Bonnie Marcus, explores how to thrive in the business environment, navigate the workplace, and climb the corporate ladder. Listen live every Tuesday at 2 p.m. Eastern Time on the Voice America Business Channel and effectively promote yourself today.
Do you need directions to solid financial future? If so, the Money Answers Show with Jordan Goodman will provide you with a roadmap to making smart money decisions in every area of your personal finances. Join Jordan every Monday at 12 p.m. Pacific Standard Time, 3 p.m. Eastern, for the Money Answers Show on the Voice America Business Channel. Learn how and where to get the best deals on mortgages, cars, and insurance. Find out the best ways to save for college and retirement. Get out of debt, improve your credit rating, and save on your taxes. The Money Answers Show with Jordan Goodman will provide you with great tips on investment opportunities in real estate, stocks, annuities, and other investment vehicles. That's the Money Answers Show with Jordan Goodman on the Voice America Business Channel every Monday at 12 p.m. Pacific Standard Time.
Voice America Business Network, the bottom line in business.
You're listening to Zoomed Leadership with your host, John Schmidt. For more information about John and our program, visit avastoneconsulting.com. That's A-V-A-S-T-O-N-E consulting.com. Now, back to Zoomed Leadership.
Okay, back today, last segment here on Zoomed this week, Tim Winton, our guest, Lessons from Permaculture Living. And Tim, we were just talking about the nature of the principles and trying to put those together. I was making some comments about interior, exterior, and pulling all together. But can you say a little bit more about this in terms of the learning and the potentiality of this in communities and organizations, where this might go?
Yeah. I think the big leverage, at least from my perspective and the journey that I've had, is that the real traction now going forward in manifesting sustainability and going through, you know, what we talk about as the great transition to a resource-constrained future is about really what I call applied integral sustainability. And that's a term I've developed for a sustainability discipline that is applied at the community level, at the level of the bioregion, more localized approach, much like permaculture, but that includes equal dimensions of I space, or the personal, we space, the cultural and community, and eco space, the environment. So rather than having the principal focus on the environment, we balance all of those three. And the tie-in is this idea of patterns and principles. And I'd just like to explore that a little bit, that we look to nature and we see an ecology and we see sunlight streaming in and water and minerals and animals and plants transforming this energy and all the insects providing their unique role within the ecology and the process of nature and its ongoing dynamic. It's very beautiful, it's elegant, it's efficient, it's complex. And if we observe those dynamic patterns, those organizing principles that keep that living, dynamic, evolving organism called an ecology alive, those dynamic patterns can actually be represented as principles. So we can look to nature and we can see that it has a limited solar energy income and therefore it has small and slow solutions. It produces things very slowly, but in a very, very sure and ongoing way. Slow and steady wins the race in nature. That's a principle that we can see in these dynamic organizing patterns in nature. So we embody these things that we observe in nature as words, and they're called principles, small and slow solutions, in David Holmgren's terms. And that is key, and it's absolutely key concept and core insight into something like an applied integral sustainability, is that if we understand how to observe nature's, and you know that's with a big N, all of nature, including human society, if we learn to observe the patterns and embody them as principles, then all we really need to do is to fix the blocks, kind of like practicing Chinese medicine, because every system, natural systems and human systems, have a source, a self-organizing capacity, and it's only where those organizing principles break down that things become unsustainable. So in our own society, we're not mimicking the sustainable or enduring organizing principles well enough. We're going too fast and we're too big, therefore creating too much pollution, which, as you mentioned, John, is an output of the human system, which can't be integrated as an input of the natural system. Therefore, we're undermining the enduring health of the biosphere, which will ultimately undermine the health of human society. So to get back to systemic health, we need to adjust, just a little adjustment, seemingly, and make it clear that we need to become smaller and slower in how we do things, and to do that in a good way, so it doesn't limit our human potential. It can actually increase it. So understanding patterns and principles in sustainability and applying them to iSpace, WeSpace, and EcoSpace for me is critical. And that would be the foundation for an applied integral approach to sustainability.
And so what I'm hearing is we're engaging the people and an interiority of the people, and we're then engaging that in reworking, redesigning, building resilience in our communities, thinking about the slow path of the actual livingness that might occur in the systems, and we're building principles associated with that. But Tim, by the same token, the transition to that, in some respects, has got a speed to it that we're going to be making the transition more quickly. We're needing to make some transitions in some ways more quickly as we do this. So it's an interesting sort of edge here that we need to look and understand some of the dynamics of these patterns designed for that. But by the same token, we're talking about mobilizing people in a more quick fashion of movement toward a sustainability system. And that feels like it's kind of an edge.
Yeah, the pace of change is definitely increasing. I've got this great quote from Brian Schwimm that I love, and it's the future belongs to the most compelling story. And that's such a fantastic statement, because I think it's so true that if we plant that little seed crystal in society, if we just get that one idea across, that we can have a better future by mimicking nature and applying its principles and patterns to all dimensions of our experience, that's a very compelling story. The other story is the story that's already being told in some quarters, that you know, there are people in other parts of the world who are doing bad things, and they're causing our lifestyles to diminish and our economies to diminish, and therefore we should go to war and fight over the last of these resources. I think that story is being told, and it's had some traction already. But a much more compelling story is that it's easy to mimic nature and apply it and develop a much richer personal life, a much richher community life, and a much better and more sustainable ecology, if we can just tell that story, if we can just take on this core bit of literacy, you know, how to understand the principles of nature and apply them to make our lives better, that's great. You know, it's the story of hope, and it's the story of a much more interesting and compelling future. And that, you know, that story can be told through something like an applied integral sustainability, where that core insight is made real for people. I know it seems a bit intangible perhaps to your listeners today, but if people can gain that core insight and apply it, and just gain some understanding that there's a personal transition, there's an environmental transition, there's a community transition, and how to effectively apply that transition in all those domains through understanding natural principles, we're taking a big step forward.
But at the same time, what you're describing to me is that the view that we have, the old system and the new system, the old system is the battering ram approach, which is to go out in kind of the defense mindset that we've had and go attack and get everything we need. You're describing something that's very different than that. And with that has a sense of shift in an interior sense, an internal sense. And it just seems to me, Tim, that that's part of what we've been talking about, the up close and personal here on Zoomed, that without the consciousness, without the mindset, without the development development of the human being individually and collectively. It's going to be a challenge to do this because of the running up the barriers, but what you're describing here in that quote and in your statement is the positive, the view of the future, the potentiality, and that's the potentiality that we're really turning to and beginning to explore more of.
Yeah, the great transition actually represents a great opportunity. I could sum it up with that.
Tim, that's great. I hear the music in my ears here. Again, appreciative. Wonderful to have you on Zoom. Wonderful to continue our conversation, what we've had over the last several years. Thank you for joining us and getting up early. And I suspect the sun is up by this point, huh?
It is. Sun has risen. Thanks very much, John.
Great, Tim. Thank you. Thanks for joining us. And guests, those interested in following up with Tim, www.patterndynamics.com.au. You can find him there. You can find us at Zoom. You can find me in Avastone Consulting. And next week, to continue our conversation, but to broaden this, we're going to turn even more to the oceans, to the natural world, to what we can learn. Oscar nomination for Best Feature Documentary currently in Hollywood, the movie The Cove. The director, Louis Sohoyas, and we will have a rich conversation with Louis next week. Join us. The conversation continues. We're going to explore even more into the oceans, bring that into the realm of the physical realm of the world and the nature of what we are doing to it. And as Tim is saying, the integral perspective, our own dimension, the systems, the redesign, how it all comes together, that's part of Zoomed. Have a great week, everyone. Enjoy. Come back soon. See you later. Thanks.
Thank you again for listening to Zoomed Leadership with host John Schmidt. Please be sure to join us again next Monday at 11 a.m. Pacific Time, 2 p.m. Eastern Time on the Voice America Business Channel, and have a terrific week.